You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
What a whirlwind of executive orders that continue to just wreak havoc in the United States with our workers and employment and just affecting American citizens on so many different levels.
Well, not only I have never seen anything like this, nobody's ever seen anything like this because past presidents have never come close to the amount of executive orders that Joe Biden has made. And what's interesting is his conversation some months before he became president was that he's not a dictator. He would not do this. This should all go through the Congress and through the proper means. And that was a lie. And, you know, the one thing that strikes me and has always struck me about Joe Biden is that he lies. And he lied about this. And he has, like you say, made a whirlwind of executive orders that have thrown our country in turmoil and employment in turmoil.
You know, this bothers me, you know, so much. And, you know, the use of the word liar is such a stringent word. But I'll tell you what, in looking at everything we're seeing here, how could you not call him a liar? Because we've had, you know, so many, media, news clips of him specifically saying that he wanted to be an American president. He wanted to be a unifier, accused Trump of being the opposite, of being a disunifier, of tearing the country apart, of not being transparent, of not allowing the American public to communicate, you know, with him and him with the American public. And I've got to tell you, every bit of that came out of his mouth over the course of this election cycle was nothing but political rhetoric and lies. You know, you have to look at behavior. You can't look at the rhetoric. So let's just compare and contrast what President Biden has done so far and in his first 9 days of his presidency as compared to President Trump and President Obama and President Bush, okay, are three, you know, most recent presidents.
Right.
So, like I said, he signed, in his first 9 days of office, he signed 40 executive orders. Obama only signed 5. And Obama came in with hope and change, and, you know, he was going to turn things after the Bush administration, you know, upside down, basically, and, you know, so-called, you know, move America forward. And he only signed 5 executive orders. George Bush, in his first 9 days of the presidency, didn't sign any executive orders. So now we have 40 executive orders in all range of things. And the American public shouldn't be surprised at all because, you know, we said that, you know, President Trump promised and then fulfilled his promises. Well, Biden's doing the same thing, only they were horrible promises that he made. And as a result of the executive orders, we're really seeing some horrible things taking place in the United States.
And President Trump only did how many in his first 9 days?
4.
4. Okay. So we have 40, and virtually every one of them, in my opinion, is destructive to America. The things that are being done are, you know, I mean, if you take a package and you start unraveling all the ribbon and the ties, and I mean, that's what he's doing. And we're just making a mess. And the newest one, I think, that he signed had to do with Obamacare, with reinstating and letting people register in Obamacare. And of course, he's going to go back and try to reverse all of the things that Trump did with Obamacare and try to pump it back up.
Well, what's going on, at least from the way that I analyze this thing, is this guy has known probably for at least 3 years that he was going to run for the presidency. And then, of course, the election cycle to run for president is really about 18 months. It's really almost 2 years. And so for at least that time, he's had counsel with a number of so-called experts in these different areas, immigration, finances, health and welfare, social services, criminal justice. I mean, you name it. And I think I said immigration. But he has no immediate plans to move the country forward. Now, he says he does, but there's no plan. So let's just take the first one. And that is, he stopped the border wall on day one. Day one, the first executive order that he signed was to stop all construction on the border wall. So let's talk about how that affects the American public.
Okay. And by the way, there were contracts in place for that border wall. So there are going to be lawsuits regarding that. So here we are back in nothing but litigation on virtually every one of these orders that Joe Biden has made. So with regards to the border wall, I mean, we've talked about this many times, Ron, that the border wall being built, I think President Trump had 450 miles built, but we needed more. But even with what he had built and what he had reinforced that was already there, we just stopped illegal immigration to a trickle in this country. And we didn't have the hordes of people flowing over the border into America that we had. And not only just the border wall, you can't divide the two where we, President Trump had made the ruling that people had to stay in Mexico to wait for their hearing. So when you combine those things, which Biden has removed, I mean, we had a pretty good situation with our immigration.
Well, yeah, here's the difference between the way I look at it, between the Trump administration and the Biden administration. With the Trump administration, there was a cohesive plan. There was a cohesive plan in place that didn't just cover the border wall construction. It covered international policy. It covered immigration policy. And so he knew from day one when he took office that he was going to begin construction on the border wall, no matter how that was going to take place. So, you know, basically signs an executive order. We're going to move forward with the construction on the border wall. But then he immediately impacted our immigration policy, our international immigration policy, with our neighbors to the south, with Mexico, with Latin America, and by the way, with other countries. And as you said, change the dynamic. Because under the Biden administration, which wasn't that long ago, it was 5 years ago, the Obama-Biden administration, yeah, right? We had tens of thousands of people coming up in caravans up into the United States, going through Mexico from, you know, all the normal countries, you know, San Salvador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and also people from Mexico. And they were coming across the border and we were doing catch and release. So basically we would catch them by the hundreds of thousands and we'd release them into the United States for some, you know, court appearance. And by the way, if you remember the statistics, 97% of those people never showed up. So they're out there in the United States and God knows what they're doing. Some of them are employed, I'm sure, but I'm sure a great deal of them. And we're now talking about millions of people are on some sort of government subsistence, right? And now under the Biden administration, they're going to be looking at an immediate pathway to citizenship. So, you know, that's just one thing. No policy with the Biden administration. Right, no policy with regards to international relations and immigration, as opposed to a border wall and immigration policy with President Trump.
You know, why wouldn't he wait and do this through the Congress and do this through the Senate and have them come up with some rational plan instead of just stopping what we're doing? Because what has he done? He's now he's got people coming up again, through Honduras, through Guatemala, through Mexico, into the United States, headed to the United States to cross our borders. And, you know, this, like you have said, this destabilizes the other countries, but there was no plan. And, you know, one of the things that Biden says, he was signing all of these executive orders, he said, I don't even know what I'm signing. And that's the truth. He didn't write those executive orders. Somebody wrote them for him and he signed them. I am wondering, with his cognitive disabilities, if he even read them ever or understood what was in them as he signed all of these orders.
You know, we've been talking about this, the cognitive disabilities. We've been talking about this for months now. And anybody that listens to Biden speak understands that he's all not there. And I'm not trying to be disparaging. I mean, it's a forensic fact. Listen to him. It's very hard for him, unless he's reading from a script on a teleprompter or in a texted speech, he can't string three cogent sentences together. He simply gets lost. He gets lost about where he is. These are policies, and I'm going to speculate, but these are policies that are written by other people, and who are going to write these policies? People like Susan Rice, people like, you know, the immigration PACs, the political action committees, the American Civil Liberties Union having input. All of these people had George Soros having input, Barack Obama having input. What we have with Biden is the puppet in front of the curtain, but we don't get to see who the puppeteers are because it is not a transparent administration. And even if we go back just a few years to the Obama-Biden administration, my impression was the least transparent presidential administration in our history. This one's worse.
This one will definitely be worse because even he doesn't know what's going on. So how is he going to convey that to the American people, short of whatever somebody writes for him on a teleprompter? I have watched him since he's become president, and his movements are slow and deliberate, as though to make a movement physically, he has to really think about it. And it's very, very concerning because I feel the same way. I feel that it is a puppet situation, and and then I see Kamala, you know, in the same pictures, and she has no idea what's going on. She has no idea of just, I feel as though she's completely lost.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the news clips of the press conferences and the difference between the press conference that Biden holds and what's the name of his new press secretary, the female who's his press secretary, Psaki?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is the P silent?
I don't Psaki? Know. I'm not sure.
Anyway, if you just take a look at that, that is extremely scripted. They get to choose which members of the Washington press corps are in that press conference, and then they cut people off very, very quickly. When you saw the President Trump press conferences, and I, as I told you before, and I think I wrote an article about it, I really disagreed with the way that the Trump administration ran their press conferences because they were rock'em sock'em. And they allowed idiots like, Acosta to come in and not ask a newsworthy question, just basically make some sort of political statement and argue with either the president of the United States or his press secretaries, the various ones they had. The Biden administration, it's very much locked down, scripted. The people are specifically chosen. I'm really surprised that they allow Peter Ducey from Fox in there.
Well, they don't call on him that often.
Yeah. But anyway, but let me switch gears for a second. But I still want to talk about the border wall, and I want to mention also the Keystone Pipeline, which he killed on the first day of office. Both of them stopped construction on the border wall and Keystone Pipeline. Look at how many people were employed on the border wall.
Yes.
Okay. Like you said, there were huge contracts. There is going to be litigation. I believe in the contracts. You know, you and I write contracts every single day with clients, and they've got to pay us whether or not we do that work. There's a certain amount of money that needs to be paid out whether or not we do the work. If they breach the contract, they're stuck paying. So, but look at the, you know, tens of thousands of people that are involved in the border wall construction.
Well, and it's the company that is making that actual
border wall
fencing. Those people have invested in materials and labor and all of those parts and pieces to the wall are in some form of being finished. So all of that is going to have to be paid for, and who knows what's going to happen to it. And then all of the people that were employed in the companies that created and made the raw material for the fencing that then put it together to make it be fencing that then transported it.
By truckers.
Then actually built it. All of those jobs gone.
And there is not much difference in the concept of the loss of employment between the border wall and the Keystone Pipeline. So what we have is, again, not only the actual workers, the welders on the Keystone Pipeline, but again, you've got, like you said, right from the beginning of the manufacturing process, the steel mills that are creating the steel sheets that they then turn into pipes and weld those 4 to 5 foot diameter, you know, pipes of varying lengths. Then it is the inspectors. Then it is the truckers that bring them out to the sites. And then it's the people digging, not just welding, but the people digging and the cement and all the different, and the substations that have to be created. And then, as we talked about, the infrastructure from the towns that the Keystone Pipeline passes through. Just like the border wall, the Keystone Pipeline is passing through various cities and various states, and so is the border wall. And so we're talking about tens of thousands of jobs between, you know, those two projects at a time when America desperately needs to be employed. And now they've all gone from working today yesterday to not working today.
Exactly. I'm going to get you that first cup of coffee, and I have more to say on that Keystone Pipeline.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Regarding the Keystone Pipeline, this is not just something that affects someplace like Texas, Ron. It affects the entire country. One of the things that President Trump did and did really well is to make America energy independent. And that is a huge deal. If you remember the days when we were begging for oil from our enemies, and they controlled the price of oil, and they controlled whether we got oil or not, and they controlled a lot of politics by using their oil as leverage. Now, with President Trump making the country energy independent, they could no longer do that. So the first thing that Biden does on day one is to stop the pipeline coming from Canada all through the United States down to Texas and bringing the crude oil to the refineries in Texas. Well, not only did lots and lots of people lose their jobs, but America now risks our energy independence, which should affect the entire country. The entire country should be up in arms about this. Governor Abbott in Texas has made his own executive order in Texas that calls on anybody in Texas to oppose what he called the Biden administration's bid to destroy jobs, that with his actions that are targeting the gas and oil industry. And by the way, not only just as an aside, and I want to talk about that too, he stopped fracking. So, but I want to talk about the oil and gas industry. This is a job killer all over the country. And it's not just the pipeline. It's so many pieces and parts of the gas and oil industry that he has stopped. So Abbott said that he's going to sue any action that is taken that affects the jobs of people in Texas regarding, you know, the pipeline or oil and gas, because energy is a huge part of the jobs and the economy in Texas. So he's not going to stand by and watch this. He's going to do something about it.
Well, I don't think he's going to be the only person that does that, too. And by the way, we have a wonderful governor in Greg Abbott and also our attorney general, Ken Paxton. And I hope they join forces together and do exactly that. But they're not the only state, obviously, that's affected. I was listening to the Republican senator from the state of Montana, and he was talking about the loss of revenue from the pipeline coming through the state of Montana. And he is looking at the state losing approximately $100 million in tax revenue by having the oil pass through the state of Montana. So when he was talking about how it affects Montana, it's the same thing that is going to affect every single state, you know, where the pipeline, you know, crosses through.
Including Canada.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I want to get to Canada last. But, you know, just think about what that tax money is used for. And he was very articulate in discussing that. So the infrastructure of the state, the roads for the state, the school system for the state, law enforcement and their criminal justice system, all of those components of the societal structure in the state of Montana, and I dare say in the state of Texas and any other state where the pipeline passes through, are going to be equally affected, right? Then we talk about our neighbors to the north in Canada, where, you know, we are supposed to have good relationships with our, you know, our border nations, you know, Canada and Mexico, and look at what that has done to Canada. And, you know, we had a nice relationship with regards to energy between, you know, Canada and the United States. And now for the time being, unless the courts overturn this, and we're going to have serious issues. Then let's talk about the idiocy and about the environmental impact. So we've got a pipeline that goes through from Canada through several states. And like you said, goes down to the Gulf in Texas, passed through several states to do that. That is a clean way of transporting oil. Very clean way. What are the other ways that you transport oil? Well, you transport oil, and you see this all the time, in rail cars, right? In those big tubular rail cars, all right? So what happens then? So you've got that oil being transported. If you have a derailment, if you have any leaks in those oil, you know, carriers, that can be catastrophic. The other thing is, think about those locomotives, those diesel power locomotives, and how much pollution are they putting out. But then economically, I don't think anybody's really taken a look at who owns the train companies that are going to be carrying that oil. All right. And somebody needs to take a look at that, because you will find that one of the major owners of railways is Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett is, of course, a Democratic supporter. He was not a Trump supporter. The other thing that they should look at is, if we are going back to the energy independence and oil independence of going back to Saudi Arabia, who has never been a friend of the United States, and going to Venezuela and these types of countries, they're putting them on these giant ships that are plying through the waters and using energy to do that. And then you have to worry about the oil leaks and the bilge that they release out into the environment and all of that.
Well, and the trucks. So if it's not rails and it's trucks, you have the same situation. What are the trucks running on? Fuel.
Right.
Okay. And so we have all of that potential pollution from all of these trucks, and a truck can only carry so much. The pipeline can carry ever so much more. And the thing is that along the pipeline from start to finish, there are sensors, and those sensors detect if there's any problem at all so that it can be stopped. So it's actually a much safer way to transport the oil than any of the things that you or I have mentioned.
And let's talk about the rise of cost of that energy. So oil that they use for home heating, and also oil that's refined into gasoline that we use with our vehicles, our automobiles, our trucks, our buses, I mean, you name it. And when you look at states like California, which has the highest gas prices in the United States, because they have so many taxes and everything like that, and you look at the tremendous amount of commuting that Californians have to do, and I dare say other states as well, all of those prices are going to go up. And they're going to go up immediately. They're not going to go up, you know, in a half a year. They're going to go up immediately, and you're already starting to see this happen. And so who does that affect? The people that are commuting, that have the lower, you know, paying jobs, and then also middle-income America, those are the people that are affected by that. Now, I remember when we lived in California, you had your office about 50 miles away from where we lived. And I remember you filling up your gas tank. Was it twice a week?
No, every other day.
Every other day. Okay. So every other day, you're filling up your gas tank. And what was your average gas tank costing you in California? What do you think?
$60.
So every other day, you're spending $60. And then just do that times, what, let's just say 12 times during the month. So what is that going to cost you? So take a look at the person, and you are doing very well in business. Take a look at the person that is a lower income individual, a lower income worker, or even blue collar worker, you know, someone like that, who's not making a significant amount of money. How does that hurt them? What about salespeople? What about the truckers that are self-employed truckers? What is that causing them? And, you know, they're putting 100 gallons at a time in those 18-wheeler trucks. So at a time where America is really hurting from the COVID pandemic, and everybody's shut down, and people are losing their jobs left and right, not one thing that Biden has done so far has been a job creator. It's been a job and economic destroyer.
Right. Well, John Kerry, who's Biden's presidential envoy for climate, he says that, oh, you know, the workers will have better choices in the energy industry. Really? Well, I want to talk about that in a minute. But what he says is that the pay will be better and the jobs are cleaner. And he said that it's a false notion that dealing with climate comes at the expense of energy workers, and says that there's a lot of money to be made in the creation of new, healthier jobs in sectors such as green hydrogen, geothermal heat, and other renewables. Well, I really beg to differ. Number one, we're not there yet. We're not ready to put people to work tomorrow. They lost their jobs already. They need a job today. They don't need a job in a year from now and 5 years from now. They need a job today. But I also want to talk about, Ron, disparity of income that comes with this whole thing, where they say that they have other jobs that are great. If you look at what these guys made in oil and gas extraction, for example, they made $38.03 an hour, and there's 163,700 of these people. So what is going to happen to those jobs? 163,700 jobs that make $38.03 an hour. Or if you want to take refinery workers, there's 172,000 jobs at $40.32 per hour. And now you want to maybe make them a solar panel installer, of which there are 12,000 jobs that make $21.58 an hour. That does not sound like comparable jobs. And there's no availability in those industries for over 300,000 workers that we just talked about.
Well, you know, I got a couple of things in regards to that. And people that are our friends and followers and listeners need to pay attention to the words that you're using, Linda, and that the government is using, that actually that John Kerry is using, okay? And so he uses the word installer, okay? So like you said, Linda, there was 12,000, right now there are 12,000 solar panel installers. What's missing here? Manufacturers. Name one solar panel manufacturing company in the United States. Can you do one?
No.
You can't?
No.
All right. There used to be one.
Solyndra.
And what happened to Solyndra?
Well, they went out of business after being given millions and millions of dollars from the Obama administration. Okay. In fact, it might have been billions. Well, I don't know. But they used all that money in not ethical ways at that company, is what I read. But either way, they went out of business. So where do the solar panels come from, Ron?
Well, they come from China.
So
okay.
Who's going to get the business,
exactly.
America or China?
Exactly. And the thing that really bothers me about this, and I don't have a disagreement that years from now, you know, we will be a greener nation than we are right now. There's going to be more people using electric power vehicles, you know, things like that. But here's the problem I have. What Biden and his administration that are way off to the left and paying far too much attention to the environmental radicals, what they've done is overnight, literally overnight, killed tens of thousands of jobs and maybe hundreds of thousands of jobs.
I'm sure it's hundreds of thousands of jobs.
When you look at the infrastructure, what are they not doing? They're not doing incremental changes.
Exactly.
Right? Okay. Well, first of all, Let's keep the pipeline going. Let's continue the drilling, you know, up in Alaska. Let's maintain our very secure, economically viable position as America being the world's leading independent energy source. Okay, independent energy, not depending on our enemies like Venezuela, you know, like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, not an enemy, but not a friend. A very exploitive situation through OPEC. And by the way, when was the last time during the Trump administration you heard anything about OPEC?
I didn't hear anything about OPEC.
Yeah, but you heard about it all the time during the Bush administration, yes. The Clinton yes. administration, and also the Obama-Biden administration. The reason you don't hear anything about OPEC is because it went away under the Trump administration because we became oil or energy independent. So why not say, okay, 20 years from now, we're probably going to have less of a dependence on oil and gas because we're going to be moving towards more electric cars and things like that. Let's tone it down. Let's just keep this going for a while we're building these manufacturing plants, while we're trying to create these jobs that make solar panels or, you know, batteries or, you know, whatever. But that's not what they've done. At the worst time that I can think of since the Carter administration, they have killed overnight hundreds of thousands of jobs. And they just think overnight, these naive people in Washington who have everything they want. I mean, John Kerry's flying around in a jet that consumes 40 times more, you know, carbons, has a greater carbon footprint than a single passenger. And they're just saying, well, these guys can, you know, just get a job tomorrow. Buttigieg says, well, they can just go into coding. And we've talked about the changes in the culture. You just can't do that to the American worker.
The other big lie is fracking. Before the election, Biden was asked numerous times about fracking. Are you going to stop fracking? Are you going to stop fracking? And most of the times he avoided the question. But at the times that he answered it, he said right into the camera that he was not going to stop fracking. And it was in one of the debates that he looked right into the camera and he said he was not going to stop fracking. Well, he did stop fracking. So now you have all of these other people in Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in Oklahoma, in numerous states that are also going to be out of work. And it is the result. It's not just the people out of work. That's bad enough in itself. But it is the now the rise in energy costs that will be in effect, that will affect the entire country, that will affect every single person that uses energy in their car, in their home, in a hospital, no matter where. So all of the costs are going to go up.
You know, it's interesting that when we're talking about all these states, and these are flyover states, okay, you know, Texas is a flyover state, Oklahoma is a flyover state, Montana is a flyover state, you know, Kansas is a flyover state. You know, we're talking about Alaska.
Well, that's not a flyover state.
No, it's not. It's a fly-in state. One third of the people that live in Alaska, I think, have pilot licenses. But you know what I'm talking about. And those people, the middle Americans, are being affected by the people that in rural Americans are being affected by the people that live in urban areas, right?
Well, but you better.
I get what you're saying.
You better believe that those people in urban areas that drive in the traffic are going to be seriously affected.
Or need home heating oil.
Yeah. Now, Montana, when you mentioned the governor there, Montana used that $100 million to pay for their schools. So there are other people that are going to suffer. So this is like a huge spider web that goes out from the center and is going to affect everything. And I'm going to get you another cup of coffee and I'm going to use my electric coffee maker.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Fighting every day against the cancel culture that wants to silence and erase us. 5 years on the air, and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
That I have my non-solar powered produced cup of coffee. You know, I want to talk about that solar power and the panels that go along with it, the solar panels. So you mentioned that they come from China. They don't come from the United States. We don't manufacture them in the United States. So if we are going to do this whole big Green New Deal climate thing, then we have to go to one of our enemies, China, to get the products. Did you happen to notice what happened when we had to go to China to get the PPE stuff for the China virus that they happened to send to us? That is that they made billions of dollars. They greatly increased their economy. As ours went down, theirs went up. Thank you for the virus. We will now sell you everything that you need to counteract the virus.
And, you know, Linda, you were dealing a lot and you continue to deal a lot with, you know, protective masks and coverings and everything like that. Did you not tell me that during the course of this thing, when this whole pandemic was beginning and, you know, we needed to mask up and we need that, your Chinese distributors were grabbing those PPP things and sending them back to China? What did you tell me about that?
No, what China did, first of all, they made a whole lot of money at it, and they basically sent it to people that, you know, paid all over the world the most for the product. But they also, because there was a halt on airline flights from China, that a lot of it couldn't get off the docks there. So we in America couldn't get the product either, which made Americans do what they do best and start manufacturing it themselves, which I was really happy to see. So I try to buy American products every time that I can over Chinese products. But I'll go back to the solar panels, Ron, because with the solar panels, they will have to come from China. You can better believe that when we are not energy independent anymore, and we have to have these because President Biden says we have to have them.
And people like Governor Newsom has already required solar panels on all new houses constructed, as of this year, 2021, I believe, every new house that is constructed in California will have to have solar panels on it.
You know, and I'm not even sure that I mind that, but when you say that I can no longer use whatever we already have, so we don't have solar panels, I don't want somebody to tell me that I have to put solar panels on after the fact.
Right.
But anyway, so the solar panels will come from China. You better believe that they're going to bump the price up because they are the sole provider of those. And then how long are we going to wait for these things? They're not made in a day. So how long are we going to wait for these? And what do we do if they're defective? And then what happens over time as they become unusable or disintegrate or damaged? How do you dispose of them? Guess what? You cannot just dispose of them. They cannot just be thrown away in the trash.
No, and you're exactly right. And even with the wind energy, and of course, we are seeing in Texas now an increase in, you know, wind energy. And, you know, you can't drive down a freeway in Texas, especially the 10, and not see the gigantic propellers blades, you know, on those trucks. They must be 200 feet long. And you see, you know, when you drive through the plains in Texas, like, for instance, if you were to drive from, you know, outside of San Antonio, and you were to go all the way out to California, you were going to pass, you go through the plains, and you're going to pass, you know, hundreds of wind turbines. And when you come into Southern California, you know, if you come in on the 10 and you come in through Barstow, and then you head in towards Palm Springs, you know, you'll see hundreds and hundreds of wind generators.
I don't like them.
But guess what? When they break down, they've got to bury them. You can't, you know, melt them down and recycle them. They bury these damn things.
Well,
so how is that helping the environment?
It's not helping the environment at all. In fact, it's seriously damaging the environment. And not to mention the amount of birds that those things kill. And not to also mention that they don't provide enough energy for us to survive on. So, like you say, if you want to make things different energy-wise in our country, then ramp it up a little bit at a time. Don't force it like you forced Obamacare down people's throats and take away that which we already have or make it cost us more. These executive orders are just the worst thing I've ever seen happen to America.
You know, one of the things that I've always worried about with regards to our relationship with China, which is always tenuous at best, is what happens if we get into a conflict with China, and what is going to happen with this new dependence on solar energy? And, you know, China, like you said, being a sole source provider of these you know, solar panels. And I don't want to take us astray right now, but if people are paying attention, look, as soon as Biden took office, look what the Chinese were doing with Taiwan and flying their jets and getting their naval ships, you know, outside of Taiwan and really causing a lot of disruption, a lot of political disruption. And look at the United States' response so far, which has been extremely tepid, right? So if we get into some sort of, not a war, but a conflict with China, China can just arbitrarily shut down the production to the United States or the distribution of the United States of all those solar panels. And guess what? We don't have a single manufacturer now to produce those solar panels. So it goes back to the installers. So if you don't have any more solar panels, now you've got 12,000 installers out of work. What are they going to do? They're going to go to coding now because they can't install anymore?
Well, and I mean, there's so many things to say about what you just said, because that also makes me think of the military, which Biden is, again, defunding just as Obama did. And our readiness, if we get in that type of a conflict, it will be desperately less. So the other things that Biden did in his first 40 edicts here.
Well, you know, we've been talking about energy. You can't talk about energy without talking about Biden signing an executive order to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah.
Right. So how does that affect us? You know, we are right now in a survey, international survey, by the way, the United States is the number one cleanest country with regards to pollution in the world. Okay. The number four for a major, you know, country. I'm not talking about little tiny countries like Norway and, you know, Finland and stuff. I'm talking about major country, world power country. We are the cleanest of all of them. Who are the worst polluters are China and India. And China doesn't have to abide by anything in the Paris Climate Accord.
Right. So
India,
what is the point?
Pakistan, they don't have to abide by anything in the Paris Climate Accord.
So what is the point of them being in it? What is the point of the entire Paris Climate Agreement if these people don't have to abide by it? What? Why would we even have it?
And one of the reasons that President Trump pulled this out of this farce is because it's completely corrupt and it hurts the United States. Okay, it's our expense in forwarding other countries. The United States is the country that is hurt the most, but is the greenest major nation that would be back in the Paris Climate Accord. What is the purpose?
I don't know. But speaking of corrupt organizations that Joe Biden has put us back into, it is the World Health Organization. That is an extremely corrupt organization, and it's done nothing to help us during this pandemic. In fact, it's done the opposite in giving misinformation and protecting China, who is their partner in there.
Well, you know, here's it just, you know, connect the dots here. The United States of America, when we were in the WHO, and I guess we're coming back now, but when we were in the WHO, we gave them on an annual basis over $400 million a year. I think the last year that we were in, we gave $435 million. China, $35 million.
Yeah.
And the WHO, their administration, completely ignores the United States of America and puts out all sorts of pro-China false narratives. And the coronavirus was an excellent example of that. It's a completely corrupt organization with completely corrupt administrators that are pro-China.
And China has destabilized the entire world with sending out this coronavirus. And they did it knowingly and they did it purposefully. So here we are, still in the throes of this pandemic, with our country, you know, losing so much wealth. And China is doubling down on their wealth at the expense of the rest of the world. And so to rejoin that organization is a slap in the face to every American.
And we got to go back over what Biden did in signing an executive order to double down, in other words, double the federal minimum working wage from $7.50 to $15 an hour. So look at all the job. I mean, we've spent the majority of this coffee conversation talking about these executive orders that are job killers, not job creators. And now we have to deal with this executive order that doubles the minimum wage that's going to affect restaurants that have already been kicked in the pants. And we've closed, I don't know, thousands and thousands of restaurants that will never open again. Some are very famous restaurants that have been open for decades, for generations. And now what we're going to do is we're going to introduce the $15 an hour federal minimum wage, of which the vast majority of the workers are in the service industry, right? Service and hospitality industry. What do you think is going to happen with that?
Well, I mean, we've talked about that before too. This is a disaster for restaurants and for hospitality and, you know, for a lot of companies, just a lot of different places. So at this time when we're already losing all of these jobs, now we're going to lose more. And some companies have already said, some fast food especially, have already said that they're going to go to electronic ordering. So you're going to walk in and you're not going to talk to a person anymore. You're going to punch in your order. So, you know, before when you'd walk in and you say, you know, I'll have a quarter pounder, but I don't want onions on it and I don't want ketchup on it.
Sort of the Burger King philosophy, yeah, right? Yeah. You're the boss.
So now you're going to just have to punch in quarter pounder and you're not going to get it your way anymore. But I see this also in restaurants that you sit down in where they have the little machine at the table now and you can place your order and you can pay from there and it just allows them to hire less people. How does that help our economy?
Great. Okay, so I'm not going to mention the name of the restaurant, okay? But yesterday, but it's a chain, it's a well-known chain restaurant. So yesterday, you know, I left work to go grab some lunch. And so I went to this restaurant and it was exactly like you said, Linda. I sat down at the table and there was the little, you know, electronic monitor there on my table. I saw the server and I saw the server three times. And that was it. The first time the server came over, said, "What would you like to drink?" And that's classic, all right? And I told her. And then she said, okay, you order on the machine, which I did. The second time I saw her was, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes later when she brought me my meal. And then, matter of fact, I only saw her twice, okay? Because when I was done with my meal, I hit the button, send me my, you know, my check, and the machine told me what I owed. I put in a tip, slided my credit card through there, and I was out of there. And I bet you there was 30 people in the restaurant, and I only saw two servers in that restaurant where normally you'd probably see four or five in a restaurant like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, and this is what's happening. And this is where I don't understand the left, where they just don't see the consequences of their actions. So every one of these things that we've talked about, and there are so many more because there was 40, and we've only talked about three or four that Biden signed. Every one of his executive actions have bad consequences for America and bad consequences for everyday people in America. And that, Ron, is what I loved about President Trump, is he was America first. And we had on January 6th, actually on November, whatever it was, 3rd, 20th, 4th, whatever it was, we lost America first.
Well, you know, it's so interesting what you're saying about, you know, decisions have consequences. Voting is a decision. And what really bothers the heck out of me is that people had an emotional response to this election, and it was their hatred for Trump in not and their selfishness and all about me and their bitter hatred for President Trump, instead of looking at the progressive, meaning moving America forward, types of policies that were truly for the American people that the Trump administration had brought in, that everybody, we're not talking COVID, all right? We're talking pre-COVID, because, you know, what can you do, right? But the Trump administration and the Trump policies move this nation forward like it has never moved forward before in 60 years. And now all of that is quickly being destroyed almost overnight. And you know what you don't hear from right now? Just look on social media. All these people that voted for Biden, where are they? Right? Are they saying in social media, oh my God, what a great job getting rid of the pipeline. What a great job knocking, you know, stopping the wall. What a great job going to $15 an hour. What a great job. Oh, we should have done this a long time ago. Thank God we have President Biden there. I'm sorry, but I'm not seeing it on social media. There is a strange silence from the progressive left.
Well, there is. And you know, there's so much more to talk about, and we will do that in our next coffee conversation, because this is, it's just a tragedy for America. It breaks my heart every day when I wake up and read what they have done in such a short time. And now we're talking about making Washington, D.C. a state, and now we're talking about stacking the Supreme Court. I mean, these are horrendous, unconstitutional ideas that they don't care.
Well, I'm going to differ with you here for a second. It's not unconstitutional, right? If they want to bring Washington, D.C. into the fold to make it the 51st state, they're going to bring Puerto Rico into the fold and make it the 52nd state. I believe, wait a minute, let me just, this is why we can disagree. I believe they can do that. Is it right to do that? Absolutely not right to do that. The Supreme Court, I'm with you 100%.
We'll keep talking about it. In the meantime, we'll see you on the radio.
I like that ending.